preparations for a government shutdown are underway. So if Congress does wind up making a deal and keeping the government open, agencies have spent a lot of time and money for no reason. Chris Kaminsky was Deputy Undersecretary for Management and Acting Undersecretary for Management at the Homeland Security Department. He's now Chief Executive Officer at Kaminsky Strategic Solutions. He's writing about the real costs of a government shutdown in the Federal Times. Chris, I apologize for fouling up your titles there, but I'm thinking about the possibility of a shutdown, and it just kind of gets me screwy in the head. You write in this piece, I can tell you that taxpayers are already paying the price for even the threat of closing the doors again at the end of the month. What did you learn in 2013 when you went through this the most recent time that applies to what agencies are doing today and how it's costing taxpayers money? Thanks for coming on, Chris.
Oh, no. Good morning, Francis. I think the thing that I found in 2013 was that, you know, there's a very long runway that goes along with this. You know, the DHS had never gone through a shutdown before, and so we were probably a little bit behind the curve, and that we had to, you know, basically create a plan from whole cloth. But what you find is that, you know, the first and foremost is that people are impacted in this. And I think that a lot of times that's lost on Congress in the back and forth of the political machinations with this. You know, from not being able to pay the mortgage, you know, the most overt issues associated with the shutdown, but also, you know, the things that go on behind the scenes as people are watching Congress threaten to shut the doors, and all the pieces of the puzzle that fall into place. It's a lot of planning and activity that goes on.
You write about the tension between the people who are deemed to be essential and the people who are deemed to be sent home, and because we don't even want to call them non-essential. They've changed the terminology as far as how they deal with those folks. But just that process has to be damaging to morale.
It is. I mean, in a place like DHS that already is challenged by morale issues, you're looking at a situation by which, you know, regardless of the lexicon, you do have a situation in which people are going to stay on the job regardless of whether they're getting paid or not, and others that will stay home that are in areas that tend to be supportive but not necessarily frontline mission. And so, you know, at DHS, there's a lot of folks that stay on the job and don't get paid. Others are waiting to see if Congress is actually going to, you know, get the job done.
There's a bill in Congress now that would pay federal employees ahead of, well, not wouldn't pay them ahead of time, but it would let them know ahead of time they're going to be paid if there is a shutdown. Does that make any difference in that area, Chris, or is that not a significant enough element of the potential damage to be done here that it's that big a deal?
I'm not sure how much help that would provide somebody that, you know, doesn't have the money in their account. What I found last time, myself and others included, was that, you know, when you're not getting paid, you know, your creditors are only so cooperative. And that the banks, you know, generally were trying to do something to be helpful. But a lot of the folks, you know, small businesses included, were relying on getting paid. And so the promise of payment doesn't quite get you there.
And that's the issue, too, when it comes to the contractors that do business with the government. The impact on that community was really a lot more damaging, I think, than on the federal employees themselves. I'm not suggesting it was great for feds by any means.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's horrible all the way around. Now that I'm outside the fence line in terms of being outside of government, you really do see the impacts and the cascading effects from federal employees to contractors to all the suppliers that are working with the government. And it's just really a situation that goes well beyond what you would normally think of.
The second element that you write about this being damaging for is the process. And you write, today each agency has to worry about closing the books on FY15 by September 30th. Planning for the likely prospect of a CR to fund fiscal 16 in the short term and the submission of the fiscal 17 budget to the White House so the process can start all over again. You're not kidding when you call this a brutal cycle, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't happen at a worse time. I mean, the budget shops and the CFOs around government are already under a lot of stress, trying to, you know, do as you articulated. And so there's a lot of stress on the system just to get the, you know, basic job done. And in a CR, even if they're able to do that for a short period of time, it's like a mini fiscal year in and of itself. And so every time that happens, you know, you've got the resetting and the reapportioning of dollars, which is just no way to plan.
I understand that now's the worst possible time to ask this question, but I have to ask it anyway. Do we take anything away from that cycle that indicates that once we, if we ever, get beyond this this hamster wheel of how to fix this in the future so that if there are issues like this again, they don't all crop up at the same time as you've laid them out?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the congressional calendar, really, they backloaded all this activity from the Iran nuclear deal to the debt ceiling. All this stuff got pushed off. As a recovering politician myself, as a state senator, I understand procrastination. But, you know, you've got a situation in which now it's all, you know, clogged at the end of this fiscal year with only 5 working days left. And you just don't see a good path for them to get this thing done.
The last item that you write about is performance and policy, and you write a casualty of government shutdown relates to new starts and good ideas. I'm particularly interested in the good ideas part, Chris. We understand that in a CR, there are not going to be any new starts. That's kind of taken for granted. But how do good ideas become a casualty of a shutdown?
Well, what happens is that agencies over the course of a year are looking at issues like GIPRA modernization. They've got cross-agency performance goals. There's a lot of activity with GAO and IG to take those recommendations and try and, you know, take stock in that and put new ideas into action to increase efficiency and productivity. And what happens in this situation is everything just gets frozen. If people are focused on the shutdown issues, you can't have any new starts. There's no change in you're reverting back to last year's budgets numbers, and so, you know, you just can't make the improvements that are necessary.
You lay this out very succinctly and very starkly at the conclusion of your Fed Times piece, Chris. You write, the public is already paying for Congress's inability to pass the necessary funding bills through impacts on people, process, and performance. I'm happy to link your piece at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But as, when we look at all three of these issues, you appear to be as positive about this as I am, or maybe as cynical as I am. You write, I tell them, your friends who ask you about the prospects of a shutdown, I can't imagine Congress would want to go through the pain and expense of shuttering the government, given what we know in terms of cost and disruption. Is there a way to quantify the dollars that are wasted on an effort like this for the next time around in order to be able to go and say it costs this much, so if the squabble is over less than this much, it's stupid? Or is that just not doable given the scope of this?
No, that's a good question. And I think that the more easily quantifiable number was that in 2013, Standard & Poor's estimated that the loss to the economy was about $24 billion. What agencies started to do last time was try and codify where the costs were in terms of preparation that they wouldn't have done otherwise. And so there is a metric around that, but it's a little squishy compared to what Standard & Poor's was able to put out.
You do sound optimistic or cynical, as I said. Set the probability at about 25%. That's less than a lot of folks seem to think it's at right now. But do you want to put a number on it, or are you just going to stick with what you wrote in the piece? That and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you don't think they'll be this dumb again.
Well, I was wrong in 2013. I really
fair point.
I really believe that, you know, folks would come to their senses and that there was no way they'd close the doors for 16 days. I'm hoping that the scenario that we saw last time is going to really put them in a better position of understanding the costs, and that nobody wins in this kind of a scenario. So I'm going to say 50-50 if you press me, but still a pretty good chance that something like this could happen.
And Chris, I appreciate your insight as always, my friend. Thanks for
coming on. Thanks for having me on.